Good morning. Welcome, everybody. So this morning, we are going to be engaging in a very fascinating topic. But before we begin, I'd like to just say thank you to our sponsors. This morning, we are learning Le'ilui Nishmas Avigail Bas Avraham. That's Ebi Najjar's mother's 30th yahrzeit, whose yahrzeit is this. Ebi is Poi Bayom. Today, Alimut should be Le'ilui Nishmasam. We're also going to be learning this morning Le'ilui Nishmas Aaron Ben Yaakov Shalom. That's Tzvi Schwartz's father, whose yahrzeit is this evening. Alimut should be Le'ilui Nishmasam. We are also going to be learning Lirufuas Ben Sion Ben Rachel, and also Alan Steinmetz is sponsoring Lirufua Mordechai Zev Wolf Ben Breiner and Shlomo Yisrael Ben Sara. It should be a schus for Lirufua Shlema. So let's start at the very beginning. A rose by any other name, quote. Where's the quote from? Shakespeare. Who says it?
Star Trek.
Not Star Trek. What? This is which play?
Romeo and Juliet.
Okay, so remember, names play a very big factor in Romeo and Juliet because names are, in fact, the separating factor. There's the Capulets and the Montagues, and the famous archetype which carries on producing, whether it be in West Side Story or many of the other archetypes of stories, but the notion that names differentiate, but how much do they differentiate? Do they really differentiate? A rose by any other name. So, it'd be so sweet. And the point is that maybe names are, in fact, we'll call it incorrect, superficial dividers, when really, 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 people can find love across the boundaries of names. And that's how it's used, in fact, in the play of Romeo and Juliet. We have to ask ourselves, so to what degree is a name a divider, or is a name inconsequential necessarily as a Jew? So, you know, it is interesting that when is the first time the Torah talks about naming, actually? So we actually talk about it on the sixth day of creation. Interestingly enough, before Adam, Hashem says, "Lo tava yes Adam levadai, es elo ezek negdai." Hashem says, "Humanity is not good to be alone." So, before correcting that, what does Hashem do? Hashem says, "Adam, name all the animals. Name all the animals of the world." And why do you think Hashem interrupted the thought of not having humanity alone, and then creating or dividing, depending which way we're looking at it, Chava and Adam? Why did that naming have to go on in between?
It would capture their essence somehow.
Because somehow Adam needed to understand what animals were about and understand that animals were different to human beings. Adam needed to understand and realize the animal kingdom is a separate, not just a, humanity is not just simply the developed and sophisticated ape. Humanity is in fact a completely different expression, a different being altogether. And in order to be able to understand that, he needed to have the experience of naming the animals. Now, how does naming them help? How is naming them going to be able to facilitate that and that awareness?
Yeah, they know their essence.
Right. So apparently, right, as the Torah says, that when he named it, that was its name. Meaning to say, that was its identity. He went around and he realized that there are orangutans as likable and as cute as they are, and as attractive as they are to in zoos. In the end of the day, they're still orangutans and they're not human beings. So that's what Adam HaRishon needed to do. So the first time we talk about naming in the Torah itself is in fact in the context of the notion of understanding, of identifying. And that's where it's first used. So the question is, okay, let's go a few centuries later. Let's fast forward a little bit, let's say to a period. We're going to go through a few periods in history. Let's fast forward to Egypt, because we're in the parashas of Yetzias Mitzrayim. We're between Bo and Beshalach now. We're talking about the schus that Israel left Egypt. So famously, we're all familiar with one of the famous descriptions. This is actually quoted by Rav Yaakov Bala Turin, but it's the name of many Midrashim. Take a look at the first source. He says a remarkable thing. We're in Sefer Shmois. What does the word Shmois actually mean? So here's what he says. Ve'eleh Shmois b'nei Yisrael abayim. So he says, Rosh HaTevos, the first five words of the Sefer of Shmois is in fact Shivya. Shafiru Kashaya Bishivya Shemois B'nai Yisrael. Meaning, when you look at the first four words, excluding the Ve'ele, it's Shin Beis Yud Hei, Shivya, which means servitude. But nonetheless, in the servitude it is Shemois B'nai Yisrael, the names of the children of Israel. So, Vizel Shamru Chazal, and he quotes Chazal in the Pirkei de Rabbi Lezer. The Pirkei de Rabbi Lezer is one of the oldest midrashim we have extant, which says, Gibishul Gimadvarim Nigalu Mimitzrayim Bishul Shiloishinu Ishmaisam. One of the famous descriptions is why was it, says the Baal HaTurim, that we did not, in fact, subside or just sink into Egyptian exile, was because we were distinct in three manners. One of them was clothes, one of them was right, the language and their names. Now it happens to be interestingly enough, it's not so easy to be able to find those things all in one place. Okay, so if you go through Chazal, they're mentioned in different places. No one Midrash which actually says that is explicitly over there. But nonetheless, he's putting together a few different Maimras of Chazal and into the beautiful Rosh HaTevos that Shivya is in fact Shemos B'nai Yisrael. That's how Yisrael HaBoyim. That is how we in fact maintain ourselves through servitude. Fascinating. Okay. So now that we have that, so if that's true, therefore the rule we should be able to extrapolate from that is therefore, in order to be able to survive any form of exile, answer is keep your names, folks. You know, just don't enter into the culture, whether it be Vladimir, whether it be, you know, whichever country we're in. And we're going to adopt, I'm not going to use American names. whichever exile we're in, the question is maybe if this is true, then why is it that so many of us, whether we look at our passports, whether we look at the way people address us, why is it that our names are not necessarily wholly Jewish? That's the question that's at hand. If this is such an important thing then why did this not continue? What's the issues that are at stake with this? Which is part of the question that we need to ask. Not so simple. Right, so we'd hope that that there's going to be some sort of explanation, because we, many of us, and our children and our grandchildren also live under this rubric. So what is going on over here?
We need a limud zchus. Right?
We need a limud zchus. But here's an important factor. Here's an important factor to bear in mind. Is we're going to need to look at this from an academic perspective. We're going to see what are the real halachic issues. But we're also going to try to take a little bit of perspective in terms of also understanding Minag Yisrael. We can never discount the fact that the Minag of Israel has been not to stick to Jewish names only. And the Minag itself plays a very important role. So we try to understand what that role is and how there was a shift between what we'll call the theory and the practice, which is what stays in front of us. Very exciting prospect. So let's start at the very beginning. One of the biggest issues that we can identify as being a problem when it comes to naming is the following. This is a very famous halacha. It's a very murky halacha. And we'll see why in just a second. In source 2, Vayikra. So we're going to go into the next step, which is called the idea of Chukos Akum, the laws of non-Jews. What does this mean? So here we are. The pasuk tells us in Vayikra, Perek Chav, V'loyselchu b'chukos hagoy asher ani mishalech mivnechem. Don't walk in the statutes and the laws of that nation that I'm sending away from in front of you. Ki es kol asher asu, eile asu, v'akutz bom. Everything they did, I was disgusted by, says Hashem. V'yisem kadoi li kadoshim, you'll be holy to me, ki kadosh ani Hashem, because I am holy, v'abdil eschem min ha'amim liyos li. And I'm separating you from the nations to be mine. So I want you to be distinct, so therefore don't do what they do. Let's just be very careful in the description over here. What is it that we're being prevented from doing? What's the actual word? What was that? Chukka, what? So this is to prevent assimilation, right? But the problem is like you can't tell people don't assimilate. We need to give them very specifics. So what's the action item over here? Is don't do their behavior. What type of behavior? A chukka. What's a chayk generally?
Without a reason.
A law without reason. Interesting enough. Meaning don't follow their rituals. Okay, don't just jump into the rituals. It doesn't mean to say that you can't play tennis like them, because, you know, as much as we love to say Jews invented everything, there were 80% of the Nobel Prizes, they weren't Jews, right? So we didn't invent everything. So the question is are we not allowed to do anything? So the answer is no. It sounds like the pasuk is saying, don't go in the chukos, the ritual practices, which may be without reason. So what does this mean, la halacha? Take a look at the Rambam. The Rambam says the following.
The second limit
of
this
as well. What's that?
Asher anu, ani mishalei ach v'shnecha. The nation limiting it to the guardian that I am.
Good, okay, good. So I mean to say, specifically the Canaanite people. Right, so we're going to have to see how that works. And you're right, when it comes to hairstyles, it's going to be very specific to that nation, this area. So here we go. The question is, do we broaden this? That's a very good question. Can we broaden this? Halacha, actually, interestingly enough, does to some degree. So listen to what the Rambam says. The Rambam says, "Ein holchim mechukos ha'avdei kochavim v'lo medamin lohen, lo b'malbush v'lo b'se'ah rakayez bohen." So we cannot walk in the ways of non-Jews, and that means to say, not b'malbush, that means to say in clothing and in hairstyle, okay? Clothing and hairstyle are the two elements that are identified as, we'll call it, practice separators. That's the way that the Rambam describes it. What does he not say?
Names.
He doesn't say names, right? So the Rambam is not describing names being a distinction over here. And he goes on to describe this. And as you pointed out, David, this is to prevent ultimate assimilation. But the issue that we're dealing with over here is what specific practices are we preventing? So let's take a look at the way the Shulchan Aruch actually reads it. Does he help us in this? The Shulchan Aruch paskening is halacha. Remember, this is a pretty murky area in halacha. Makes a very important distinction which is necessary for us to be able to exist. He says the following. One cannot walk in the statutes or the rituals of Avdei Kochavim. Remember now, let's be very specific. Avdei Kochavim literally means?
Idol
worshippers. Okay? So that means to say we're not talking about everybody, we're talking about specifically idol worshippers. Okay? V'loi medamin lohen, we cannot approximate ourselves to them, quoting the Rambam, as you just saw. V'loi yilbosh malbush miyuchad lohem. A person cannot wear a garb which is very specific to that nation. V'loi yagadel tzitzas roishoy kamoy tzitzas roisham. You can't grow your hair in the same way they grow their hair. And now we have the Rambam. The Rambam adds in a very important point. Because if you just stop over here, then that's it. Right, that's it. We'd all be in strimals, with long beards. And by the way, I'm sure the strimals were originally a good Russian practice in the nice Siberian forests.
Hello.
There was a beautiful clip on YouTube about this Satmar Chosid explaining that how Moshe Rabbeinu must have been Satmar, because how was it? There was Moshe Rabbeinu was 10 Amos and he used to walk in the Mishkan, and so, you know, what type of hat did he wear? Of course he wore a hat. So then what type of strimal did he wear? So it must have been a flat strimal, because how could he fit in the Mishkan otherwise? So Moshe Rabbeinu must have been Satmar, right? So, anyway, so yeah, so we're not going to do any of that. But in the end of the day, the Ramah says, Elo Yehei Muvdal Mehem B'Malbushov V'Shar Ma'asov, in clothing and actions. Okay, so actions is a very general there. Well, like what's included, what's excluded. He says, this only includes things which are done for some form of pritus. Pritus literally means breaking down of boundaries, right? Or immorality. So this is all for something which is simply there just because. Meaning to say, you can't really identify the source of that practice. Why? We have to be concerned in that practice, mishum darkei ha'emori, that these are the ways of the Amorites, coming back to Barry's point, which is the ways of the service of Avodah Zarah. V'shiyesh bo shemetz avodas kochavim avoseihem. Meaning you find a practice which is inexplicable. You don't know why it is. You don't know why it is that they do this particular action. So in this case, you can't do that. You can't adopt that practice because we don't know if it's rooted in some form of deity, some form of polytheistic worship. Let's say you had a practice, which is a non-Jewish practice, but it has some form of regular benefit, meaning we can understand totally why this is. Let's say the white coat of a doctor. Right, so in the end of the day, it was probably instituted by a non-Jew, right? Does that mean no Jewish doctor could ever wear a white coat because ultimately it's chukos akum? Says the Ramon, no. There's a function, it plays a very important function. It's not mystical ritual. The point is, of course, you need to distinguish who's the doctor. The doctor needs to have a status because therefore when he walks in, people need to know who he is. Basic things. Protect him from the dirt necessarily, whatever it is. The point is there's a reason. There's a logic behind it.
It's 50% of it's a Jew.
Well, could have chosen a different color, right? What happens if there's clothing which is therefore covered for the distinguished position, right? You wonder, you know, sometimes you go to a Spanish-Portuguese shul And, or, you know, in the old days, even the Shamash used to have their special hats and so on. You know, you say, well, where did that come from? You know, so at the end of the day, there's certain distinguishing clothings which are there for the point of distinguishing, for the point of making these people have a special and unique position. Thank goodness the rabbis don't wear top hats in the five towns. But at the end of the day, right, you go to a Jewish center, Abi Isad, there's some wonderful places which are still hanging out with those things. But in the end of the day, try to understand what the Shulchan Aruch is saying over here. He's saying there's a difference between practices which are just because or because of immorality, and practices which have some form of benefit, some form of logic to them. Right? So tennis, in the end of the day, it makes sense. You know, you're not, there's no ritual practice we're going back to. It's just a sport. You know, it was fun. It is fun. So go for it. But the point is that Chukos Akum has this grayer area over here as to what is considered a practice just because. Now, what he doesn't mention is names, right? So he isn't explicit about, do you say that, oh well, naming is a function of some, maybe traces back to some form of Avodah Zarah? Or do you say, no, names is different. Names is, it's not even a practice. It's not included in this. The Shulchan Aruch isn't clear, which is why, because the Shulchan Aruch is not clear about this, quoting from the Rambam and quoting from the Gemara, that's why it leaves a little bit of gray area for us as to understanding, really. So what did happen? So what was the practice about names? Why are names included or excluded from this? We're going to see people are going to use this and they're going to rally this source to their defense as to why we can't do this. This is going to be one of the sources that we have to deal with, the extent of Chukos Akum in an area which is not described by it itself. Okay, so this is our starting point. Let's go a little further. Actually, before we go further, I think it's a worthwhile point for an interesting story. Actually in Freakonomics they have at the end a description about names for those Freakonomics and armchair economist fans. At the end they talk about, there's a lot of research they do about naming. And specifically naming of minorities. So it happens to be that they were talking about a particular family, and the father had one of his, you know, he had a number of children. His second last son he called Winner. He thought that was a really nice name. Don't you think it is, definitely, you know, a great perk in life to be called Winner. The problem was when he had his last son and he realized that he had finished it, he thought that it would be actually interesting to name him Loser. So he called him Winner and Loser. Right, can you imagine that? What a terrible way to start life. So anyways, as it happens, the reason why they quoted the stories... What was that?
A lot of people named Loser.
I'm not going to comment, Miriam.
He's much better in Borough Park than
So this is before first grade friends. So what happens? Interestingly enough, they said something very fascinating. Something very fascinating happens. And that is that Winner ended up being a drug addict, spent a number of sentences in jail, never really made anything out of his life. Loser, on the other hand, interestingly enough, actually went to police academy, became a very successful person later on in life. His friends used to call him Lou. Anybody's a friend called Lou, you can ask. But at the end of the day, the name itself, or their point was that the name wasn't necessarily something which was so definitional to the person. In fact, it was almost like the opposite trajectories for the Winner and Loser. And by the way, folks, don't do this at home without close adult supervision. But but in the end of the day, you know, the question is so what? So how much is naming really a part and a parcel of Judaism? Or is it, no, it's a tangential part of, you know, cultural recognition around us. So let's take a look at a few places in history. Let's go back to France in the 13th century for a brief moment. The next source is actually from the Tosfos. Tosfos is the Academy of French Tosfos. These are the grandchildren of Rashi. Rabbeinu Tam, Rashbam, Rabbeinu Shmuel, that academy. It is said of the Tosfos Academy that they would have people who would have specific expertise in different mesechtos on Shas, and they would collaborate in such a way that they would be able to. What Tosfos does is they take questions from across Shas and collaborate them or synthesize them on every page. So here we go. Let's take a look at what Tosfos says about this particular issue. Take a look at source 5 for a quick second. Tosfos is quoting Rabbeinu Tam. So Rashi is one of Rashi's predominant grandchildren. He says, Shalom Rabbeinu Tam, al mumar la'avodes kochavim. So let's say a person, there was an individual who unfortunately his weakness in life was he believed in all of Judaism except for polytheism. That's kind of a little bit of a tough one there. Shigiresh yes ishtai, who divorced his wife, velo nechta beget elo shem shel yadus, velo shem shel avodas kochavim. Right, so what he did was he wrote his Jewish name and not his converted or his newly adopted non-Jewish name. And the question that was brought to Rabbeinu Tam is does that serve as a sufficient get? Because ultimately, he's no longer called, you know, Yankala, right? So he's got another name, right? So so what do you do? V'heishu Rabbeinu Tam, chalila lahazkir shem avod kochavim besoras Moshe Yisrael. So it's interesting. He says that, look, the get is operating based on a legal halachic system, which ends off by saying b'toras Moshe Yisrael, through the laws of Moses and Israel. And you don't want to put into that a non-Jewish name. So Rabbeinu Tam seems to be very clearly in the camp of no options. You can't. There's no way to change name. Now, this Tosis over here. Let's debate this. What was that? One second. So interestingly enough, so Alan's pointing out today. It's very interesting. In fact, we don't paskin like this. So if one goes through, one sees, let's say, Gittin being written, they will usually say the Hebrew name Demiskaria. That is called, meaning to say, let's say a person's name is, you know, is Yosef de Miskarie Jeff, you know, as an example, right? So they'll say, Yosef ben Avraham de Miskarie, let's say Jeff as an example, right? So why? Because that's the name that the person's called. Happens to be Rabbeinu Tam is not passing over, as Alan is pointing out, okay? But, you see from over here.
Considered to be an Oved Kochavim name?
What was that?
Is a regular name considered?
Great question. So I was making a very big assumption. To assume that a regular secular name is a shame, Shalavet Kochavim. But I think that let's leave it as the following. Until we can disprove it, let's say there's Jewish names and names which are not Jewish. Right now, okay?
This is just to leave no doubt, basically, who the guy is, right?
Yes. Halachically speaking, one needs to actually be able to. One actually needs to be able to identify the person halachically. So the person is walking around with a name, X, Y, Z, and you're only calling him the Jewish name, which nobody's ever heard him being called in public. You have a problem over here. That's why we say Demiskaria and we include that. Happens to be, the reason why this Rabbeinu Tam is important, this Rabbeinu Tam, thank you. Welcome. The Rabbeinu Tam in this source is an example of where you see there's a sensitivity to maintaining the Jewish name. Now, if you want to be a little careful of this, you could actually dispute this. How could you dispute the importance, thank you so much, the importance of Rabbeinu Tam's import here? Yes, Mark. Mark, what you could say is maybe Rabbeinu Tam is only saying this in the context of writing the name in a document which includes Kedas, Moshe Yisrael. Right? So I mean, you say, do you extend Rabbeinu Tam's sensitivity? Do you understand extending sensitivity to the fact on a regular day-to-day basis you're called XYZ, or do you say no, this is only in the legal documentation? That's one question you could have on Rabbeinu Tam.
In the 13th century France, most non-Jewish names were named after saints. So it was clearly Avodah Zarah.
Very good point. So Rabbeinu Tam is relating to that.
Referring to the fact that these names are Avodah Zarah.
Yes. So interesting enough, you're right. So there might be more of a sensitivity Rabbeinu Tam was having at the time. In fact, on Dr. Adler's point, there is actually one of the Balei HaTosfos themselves, infrequently quoted, is Peter, Rabbeinu Peter, actually. Pei Tes Reish, right? Interesting enough, coming back to Dr. Adler's point, they say, and it might be apocryphally, but they do say that somebody asked Rabbeinu Peter where his name appeared in the Torah. So he said it was actually in yesterday's parsha. He's right next to yours, called Peter Chamor Tifteh Beseh. Right? So now, whether that was a true story or not, but at the end of the day, there was already, as you can see, in the 13th century France, there was a lot of discussion about this. Let's move on a little further. You see, this takes us to very interesting historical junctions. Let's take, for instance, Salonika, Greece, in the 16th century. Why is this an important time in Salonika? Meaning, why is this a time to focus on names?
It's right after the Inquisition.
Right after the Inquisition. So how does that help us?
they're trying to really hide. I guess.
Good. So we have a very interesting description over here of what's going on in history. Very interesting description of what's going on in history. Because we have numerous Rabbanim who are now having experiencing an influx of Ladino Jews. Right? Jews from Spain and Portugal who have now been expelled. So the question on the table was, many of these people in fact had to change their names and ostensibly even their religion to survive, and now they've left. So here's the question. Take a look at source 9 for a quick second. We have a very fascinating response of the Marashdam. The Marashdam over here is, well, this is a cover in the, over here of his book. He has Chuvas. This is Rav Shmuel Dimedini in Salonika. Now remember, interestingly enough, Salonika in Greece at this point was actually a huge Jewish capital. In fact, there were yeshivas. It was a very widespread Jewish community, a lot of them incoming from the West. And if I'm not mistaken, I think that Rav Yosef Karo spent some time learning in yeshiva in Salonika before making his movement across to the Israel side of the Ottoman Empire. At this point in time, this was actually one of the golden eras of Jews under the Ottomans. The Ottomans were in the 1500s, 1600s, were really coming to their strength, and when the empire was at its strength, that was actually very good for the Jews. It allowed them, facilitated them safe haven and travel. Okay, so we're talking about at this point in time, in the 1500s, just to be aware of this, more than 50% of Jews lived under Islam. Just to be aware of this. The Ottoman Empire was huge at this point in time. Okay, Christians were not a good deal. We were being kicked out of Christian Spain and Christian Portugal. And it was the Muslims who are welcoming us in. Salonika was an important place over here in terms of a hub of movement across the Ottoman Empire. Now, the Marashdam is asked the following question. And this is how he deals with it. You can see the sensitivity of the age. So here he says, Portugal. So he says, look, there's a huge influx of Portuguese Jews. And as they return to the Torah system, they return their names to Jewish names. So now they need to send letters, they need to send correspondence back west to the people who are still settled in their old cities. Im lekraveihem, whether it be to relatives, v'im lemi shenosei v'nosei mamonam, or they have, let's say they have equity. Let's say they have businesses still open. So they need to speak to the managers. Right, who are managing their funds, their assets, their properties, whatever else it is, then you send letters. Im yocholim lichtov v'lashanas shmam k'shem asu shera yula asher lahem begiusam, or im yesh chashash isur b'davar mibnei shenira mekayim heyosa adayin goy u'bilti moideh b'toras Hashem. He says, or is there a problem? How can they sign their names as their adopted Portuguese Catholic names when ultimately now they've returned to Judaism? Can they put their names on those documents? Is there a problem with that? That's the question that he's receiving. Is that an interesting question? It's very much a sign of the times, is what's going on over here. Tshuva, he says, here's the answer. Emes, truthfully, Kimidas Chasidus lo kamina. He says, number one, I'm not going to tell you what the Midas Chasidus is. Meaning, if you want to go to the nth degree of improving yourselves, I'm not talking about that. Devadai Midas Chasidus hu laharchik ha'adam atzma mikol mina ha'kokos she'efshar. Look, To the degree you can remove yourselves, go for it. Meaning, distinguish yourselves completely. You're frightened, especially and especially to a person who had to dip into those waters. Meaning to a person who had to be in Christianity. He says, Midas Chasidus, maybe a person could say that they should try to avoid this. He says, but Minadin, there's no problem. He goes through a number of proofs. One of the proofs that he talks about is an interesting Gemara. The Gemara in Adarim talks about a very famous Gemara, which is unfortunately one which has had to be studied by people and Jews over the centuries, and today we're less familiar with it. But the Gemara talks about what happens if a non-Jew says, I want you to confirm that you're a servant of the fire. Avda Danura. Can you say that you're an Avda Danura? They're going to take your property if you don't. They're going to harass you. They're going to all kinds of terrible things. What do you do? So the Gemara says, you can say, Adadunurana. You can say, I'm a servant of the fire, because what you mean is, and you interpreted that you're an Eved and there is Nura, whatever it is, that you have a different intent in those words that you say. That's what Gemara in Darim says. So says the Marashtam. In this case, it's It's no different over here. You're not confirming that you're a non-Jew by writing down your non-Jewish name over here. There's no inkling of that. That's the first thing he says. Then he goes on, he says the following. He says, "Gam ha-chiluk she-cholak ma-harik-sa amzal, the da'as ha-oistrim." He says, the Maharik, who's one of the earlier poskim, says that quotes the those who are oisteret. He says, "Yesh lechalek benidon di dov v'noimar, da'ad kan, loy ka-astri ha-som, elo davko ha-som, shilavushoy, mo-chiach olav she-enu Yehudi." The Maharik, who he's quoting earlier, who said it's Osir, is talking about a person who changes his name and their clothing. Right? So they completely lost their sense of Jewish identity. The names themselves are not Osir, but Raya Davar. And he's going to bring you a proof. Going back to the Gemara in Gittin, this is not the same Gemara Tosfos is quoting, but another Gemara in Gittin, which says the following. Remember, Gittin is going to be our acid test, because that's where names are always used in halacha. Listen to what the Gemara says in Gittin, on Daf Peimut Aleph. Gittin abayim mimidina sayam, afal pi sheshmoisem kishem osagayim kisherim, mimne sheroiv Yisrael shebuchutz loretz shmoisehem kishem osagayim. So he says, he quotes the Gemara, this is the times of the Gemara, the Talmud, right? So we're talking about 1500 years ago. The Gemara says that, let's say a get arrives from Israel, from Chutz La'aretz, and the name on the get is a non-Jewish name. Of course it's a kosher get, because most people's names are not Jewish names at this point. That's astounding. Right? That means to say that there's a Gemara which is saying that most people have adopted non-Jewish names, says the Maharashtam. And he quotes, he writes this as a proof, to say, and he goes on further to say that Vagamba Eretz Israel, Hoyu Shmoy Sehem Kishemo Sagoyim, Deloy Iko Ben Eretz Israel Chutzlaretz, El Arroiv. Yeah, he says it's the Chutzlaretz and Eretz Israel are not different except for that there's more Jews in Chutzlaretz. Komoy Shinire Sham Imipiro Rashi, as the Gemara seems to be understood by Rashi over there. So what he's saying is an interesting thing, is that it seems anecdotally from the times of the Gemara that most people's names are in fact non-Jewish. Then he goes on further. He talks about the Rosh, Rabbeinu Asher, who lives in Germany a few centuries earlier, who says the following. He quotes, let's see where this begins. Aval Shem Zemavok, there we go. He says, here we go, thank you. It's about five lines down in the last paragraph, and he says, Sharei, fourth line word in, it is apparent, Mitoich Divrei HaRosh, Mashma beferush shayu Yisraelim nikraim shemos muvakim shel goyim. And he says, don't think it's just in the times of the Gemara. It's even in Germany in the 14th century. I'll tell you why. Shakasa v'zeloshani quotes Rabbeinu Asher. He says, Amalei, loy ba leyadenu eloget shayu choismim olav v'chasumim olav lukus v'lus v'ichsharunu kidekeim and loy shchichi Yisrael b'shemos alalu vada loy toa shliach lahachtim anoshim ka'ele shem domim b'shemosim legoyim. So he says the interesting thing over here. He says, look, a get came to our hands, and signed on it were these names, Luz and Lucas. Now, I don't know about you, but I don't have any friends about those names. So apparently these are non-Jewish names, and the Rosh was machshirat, meaning to say, based on the Gemara in Gittin, he says, look, we know that there must have been a sensitive checking into the spelling of these names. They must have been done correctly. But incidentally, what do we hear from the Rosh is that even in the get, not just, we'll call it colloquially, even in the get we see that names are being used, non-Jewish names, which is an application of that Gemara. So the Maharashtam himself talks about this, and he is, in fact, very much noite lahakel. He believes that there's sufficient grounds to be makel, the Gemara Nadarim, where a person is able to accept falsely when there's room, Adon Nurana, which he relates to the Jews of Portugal, where he talks about number two, the notion that names themselves aren't different. Certainly, in the case where there's an absence of when the clothing themselves, in this case, proves their Jewish nature. Why? Because as we saw, the Gemara Gittin talks about the predominance of non-Jewish names, and finally, we talk about the notion of the Rosh, where he puts us into practice. This is on the one side of this. However, this is not the last word. So let's move a little later. Now, it's interesting. We're moving from Salonika now to a little later on in history, to the Ukraine. So in the Ukraine, There is a. We're going to look at the words of a very interesting individual. Okay, so remember, as much as the Marashtam is responding to his times and the issues of his times, the Portuguese Jews, we're now going to respond to some of the issues in over here in the Ukraine. Okay, so at this point in time, in the 1800s, good, bad, neutral for Jews. What was that? It was never a bunch of roses. Right, you're right. It was never a good time. But right, so the pogroms in the Pale actually started at the end of the 1800s. It was from the late 1800s there were problems. But on the whole, there was a general sense of rest over here. There was a general peace. As we came towards the end of the 19th century, we reached a lot of problems. But interestingly enough, if we take a look at the words of Rav Moshe Shik. So he was born in Slovakia and was a Rav in the Ukraine. And this is what he says. He was asked the same question. Now, one thing which is actually interestingly enough as a biographical note is his last name for a second. His name was Shik. If you look at the back of the Gemaras now, you will find the Maram Shik in most Gemaras as one of the Pirushim on the Daf. So if you go to the back, some of the Gemara put him in the Yaakov Mefarshim, some of them have him as a separate Mefarshim in the Gemara, so he is in regular Vilna Shas as we have him. Really a prolific author. The last name Shik was in fact, it has an interesting history to it, because what ended up happening was, it was at this point in time, he lived at the time, in this area of Eastern Europe, where up till now, last names were actually weren't enforced. He lived at a time when the enforcing of last names became necessary from a governmental level, and so they forced all the Jews to adopt names. So he adopted the name Shik, because it is an acronym for Shem Yisrael Kodesh. Okay, interestingly enough, it was almost like the unname. It was like his rebellion against having to take a name was saying, was Shik. So Shem Yisrael Kodesh. So you can see where he is probably going to be coming from. So here is what he says when he's asked this question. Again, it's interesting just to capture the sign of the times as we learn this. So here's what he says. This is his Chuvin Kuf Samach Tes. He says the following. This is Be'ezras Hashem Yisbarach Yom Echad Nitzavim Ta'ataf Reish Lamed Ches. So we're talking about the first Sunday of Nitzavim. So around Rosh Hashanah time. So listen to what he says. So Harav Agon, HaTorani Amuflag, Moreno Rav Meir Kalish, Neri Yoyer. Okay, so he quotes, he's sending a letter to Rav Meir Kalish. By the way, this is a halacha. This first line to his letter is a halacha, that during the day is leading up to an Aseret Tamei Teshuva. There is a halacha in any written letter to a person. You have to mention that you're thinking of them for a ksev chasimatara. So just so this is halacha in practice over here. That you wouldn't want to be sending a letter to somebody as if you're ignoring the fact that everybody's omed bedin. Okay, so just to there's things you learn from halacha, not just because they're saying it, but because they're doing it. This is brought down in Shulchan Aruch, and he says the following: Im omnam she'ein ani yodea lechanois oisai. He said, I can't really pronounce it or express it. He says, Mikomakom Reisi Shiro Yila Shiv al Davar Asher Sho'al. I really feel like I need to respond to what you're saying. Now remember, this is a busy time of year for Rabbanim. Okay, so we're probably around the beginning of Seder Simei Teshuva. It's a tough time. And he says, I really need to respond to what you've written. He says, Sheyesh b'nei Adam shemechanim atzmam b'shem hagoyim. You're saying that there's these people who are calling themselves non-Jewish names. Umaloso neri yoir hoichiach hoisam daharei omru b'medrash. You yourself as a rav, rebuke them because it says in the medrash. Shebeschus ze shloishinu eshmam zochinu lotzeis b'mitzrayim. And you told them, look, this is the schus. That's the medrash the Baal HaTorim quoted. That's the reason why we got out of exile. You can't change your names. Ve'meshivim shloze da'ei b'meish yesh lohem shem yehudi likrosam bo la'alosot Torah. And their response is, look, when we go up to the Torah, we have our Jewish names. When we're in the workplace, we have our non-Jewish names. Why do we need both? There's a davar a hevel. He says a tipshus. He says that's empty. Ki bevada yesh bo ze isu do araisa. Kamo shikos ha-rama perek yud alef milchus avarazara. Demikra mole ne'emar besoif parashas kadoshim. Vavdil eschim en ha-amim liyos li. Umisham yalfinon besifrei. De'ein rishoyim ne'damos lehem b'shum oifen. So what is he quoting? What halacha is he quoting? The halacha of Chukos Akum that you saw. So he is marshalling the notion that this is like Chukos Akum. The Kol Shehu, Oysel Adam Oslaim, anything a person will do to be like them. Oyver al ma'ashnema b'torah, the Oysel Adam Oslaim, Ukashem Shehu Oysel Adam Oslaim, b'malbusham, v'iluchom, just as we're not allowed to act like them in our clothing or the way we call, conduct ourselves, v'sham min agam hu adin, v'kol shekein to Oysel Adam Oslaim b'shemois, b'shmam. We definitely cannot adopt their names. And by the way, he's talking about additional names. He's not saying that the person's been called this in place of the Jewish name. He's saying in addition to the Jewish name. Right? That's what he's saying. Ad kedei kach. Olenu la'asos k'moy she'asu avoseinu she'nema bohim v'ayi yisham le'goy gadol. As we say in the Haggadah, on that passage, v'darush chazal, melamed sho yisrael mitzionim sham yisrael were mitzionim. What does the word mitzionim mean?
Distinctive.
Distinct. We were distinct. That means to say, lo shino shmam. And he goes on to say the following. He says that he acted as one of the collectors, as the robber of the town. What happened was there was a certain amount of tax that each Jewish community needed to pay. So when he was handing over the tax form for his community to one of the neighboring towns in Pressburg, the officer that he was speaking to, he goes on the next paragraph to describe. He says the officer said to me, you know, I don't understand it. Why are the Jews calling their children Franz Josef? He says, I don't understand this. Aren't you proud of your heritage, which dates back centuries and millennia? Don't you have your own names to call yourselves that all your little children are now getting the name of? By the way, Franz Josef was a wonderful person to the Jews on the whole, right? And the Kaiser.
He had Alexander. You
know. Right, well, Alexander, yeah, that's an interesting adoption that Alexander was adopted in. There's specific reasons for that. But like he's saying, look, why is this? And basically he says in the paragraph, he says, I don't know what to say to the man. I don't know what to say to the officer. And he goes on to say that if we want the schus to get through this exile, even though this exile has become easier and we become more accepted, okay, so it's interesting to the notion of the times. He says, now we're living an easier life in Eastern Europe, you know, for that short window. He says, nonetheless, what we've lost is, we've lost our identity. So the Maharam Sheikh is responding very strongly. He holds it not only as a problem, he holds it as iso daraisa. That's how far he goes. Remember, what he's trying to do is he's also speaking to a set of jury or a group of jury that are being pulled on many directions. Right. Okay, assimilation is pulling in many directions in different forms, whether it be communism, whether it be the new enlightenment, right, just slowly penetrating to Eastern Europe in its own ways. But in the end of the day, this is how he feels about this. This, we should practice exactly what that Medrash says today as well. So what do you do? Oh, fantastic. So the problem is like this. Is that we have a really... The problem with this is it's not sufficient. What we've done now, up to now, what we've learned through like a sparse reading of some historical points, is not going to... It doesn't really jive. It doesn't work together. Why? Here's the problem. Is ultimately speaking, there is the theory and there's the practice and the two don't match up. Okay, so the theory, when we read that Medrash and we talk about the Nahagada and we talk about the beauty of Jewish names... That's the theory, right? The Jewish names are an item that distinguish us. But in practice, in fact, that's not the case. The Gemara in Gittin is already telling us that many people have non-Jewish names. In fact, right, and we're going to go backwards. We're going to go now to the next source. Take a look at what Rav Moshe, in fact, says. Going back to New York, the Lower East Side. And Rav Moshe has asked exactly this question. Rav Moshe has asked about a naming of a girl. I think that the case is they want to name her Gittel. Gittel is a Yiddish name, and as much as we love Yiddish and we watch Yiddish movies and listen to Yiddish songs and everything like that, but in the end of the day, Yiddish isn't biblical, right? So should they name the girl Gittel or should they name the girl Chana? Right, meaning to say what should happen in this case. So listen to what Rav Moshe says over here in source 10. What was that?
Just name her Tova.
Tova, right? There you go. So he says the following. Here's what the Rabbi Moshe says. Here we go. He says a very interesting thing in the top of source 10. He says, "Hinei b'davar shema shalaz," referring to non-Jewish names. He says, "Shekosavti she'avshu davar magune." He says, "Look, it's not a nice thing. Ain't no isur. It's definitely not an asur." Shelachen chazinan. He says, "Look, let's look back at the centuries. Shekama shema shalaz mikol medina umedina nasa b'meshach hazman to galus ha'aruch shenichlufu b'medinos." Look at history, as Eliot says. History is overflowing with non-Jewish names. Let's go give a few for an example. Even though they probably, you know, probably somebody said from the pulpit while it was happening, this is not a good thing. Nonetheless, Nishtaku Hashemos Ben Yisrael, Achinikru Kvar Lishemos Yisrael. Those names became so Jewish that they're actually called Jewish names today. Right? He says there are many German and Yiddish names that we have. Migore Svard, Harbe Shemos, Michel Svard, we have many Spanish or Svardim names. Examples. The Magid Mishnah, right? One of the predominant Mepharshim, or Noisei Kelim, on the Rambam, on the inner column of the Rambam, Sheshmoya Rabbeinu Vidal. That ain't a Jewish name. Ukama Goanim, the Mishtachinon B'Tshuvas Rishonim. The Gam Shem Shal Maimon, Rav Moshe Ben Maimon. That ain't biblical, that ain't Jewish. Aviv Shal Rambam, Kinir Shu Shem Laz, Shalachin Chasu Shalom on Loimar, Shalai Osu Kohoigen, the Akhra Shakvar Niska Raglu Yisrael B'Elo HaShemos, Emohim Shaychus L'Tam Agnai. He says, look, once it began practice, then there's no problem with it. And he goes on further, actually, it wasn't in this paragraph. But if you go back to the Gemara's, the Gemara itself, Mar Zutra, Mar Kashisha, Rav Papa, those are Aramaic Babylonian names in the end of the day. Let's not kid ourselves, right? The Greek names, Papus. There are so many non-Jewish names which are the greatest of our people were called by these names. Right? Mordechai is interesting, by the way. There's an interesting footnote in the Maram Shik, actually, he quotes Mordechai as an example of Ish Yudayayab Shoshana Biroshma Mordechai as an example as not as being. Right, so interesting, it happens to be there is an interesting background to the name Mordechai. So what do you do, says the Rav Moshe. How do you square what history has practiced and with this Midrash? Meaning to say, it's true that it became, that's what he's suggesting, but how was it that nobody just said this is assimilation, this is a red line? Why not? So he says the most interesting thing, and this is a paragraph which is on the one hand relieving, on the one hand terribly, terribly heavy. At the same time, listen to what Ramosh's unbelievable decisive logic says. So here's his logic. He says, "Vine, yesh makom lomar." Says Rav Moshe, "You may think there's room to say, 'Dezesh shimchu chazal v'yikra rabba begalus mitzrayim shelo shino shmoisam hu lekoidem matan Torah.' That midrash which says that Israel did not change their names was when pre the Sinai giving of the Torah." Shiloi haya heker gadol bishul kiyum hamitzvos tibnei noach ubifrat shechelek gadol miyisrael avdu gamken avodah zarah. He says, look, how could we distinguish ourselves? We had the same seven mitzvos as the rest of the world, and we were partially polytheists at the time in the Egyptian exile, as the Midrash says, elu avdu avodah zarah, elu avdu avodah zarah by the Kriyas Yam Suf. V'rubam loy malu es b'neihem. And we know that there wasn't Bris Milah in Egypt, that needed to do that at the end. Right, Parshas Bo, just before the Korah and Pesach, wasn't Bris Milah happened. At Samach La Geula, Kusha Yitzrichim Le'echol Pesach, Shemolosam Yoshua, Umashim Shoy Yoroiv Godel Levad Shevet Levi, Shehem Malu Es Bnei'em. Besides so Shevet Levi, nobody was circumcising, Kirichsiv, Ubrischo Yin Soiru. Right, that's a Pesach. But Berkas Moshe, that Shevet Levi kept the Bris, but nobody else. It's referring to Mitzrayim as well. Shlochein, Bishvil Haimuna, Shigalu, Verotsu, Shiyu, Nikorim, Shem Yisrael, Hinhigu, Lahak, Bichelo, Yishanu, Shmom, Uleshanu, Shlashanam. Why do they need to have different languages and a distinct clothes and distinct names? He says, because that's the only thing which could distinguish them culturally. And that's why it's part of the Geula. Mishum shebishvil emunas haGeula hikpid al zeh, because they believed there would ultimately be a time where they would no longer be just Egyptian, you know, in the Egyptian melting pot of society. Avol acha matan Torah, ein lo nechiyuv midina. There's no chiyuv midina to preserve the Jewish name. V'gam lo miinyan es zehirus umusar elamash shinistavino hatarag mitzvos ledoros hamitzvos shinistavu l'sha ukafir shenemru b'Torah shabal peh. That's why people didn't scream about it as much as you would have thought as being a mitzvah midoraisa. Now he says at the beginning, remember, at the beginning he says it's not a great thing. But he's saying in the end of the day, it's not our identifying factor. This is what a remarkable, remarkable idea that Rav Moshe is saying. So this goes two ways. One way is the relieving way, which is, he's saying is that, look, names aren't all we have. And because names aren't all we have, therefore, what is our identifying factor?
Torah
mitzvahs. So therefore, then we don't. It's beautiful to have a Jewish name, and one should have a Jewish name, and one should try to be called by a Jewish name. Absolutely, Rav Moshe says. But that's not who we are. That doesn't make us who are Jew. It's like the bagel and cream cheese lox Jews. That's not who we are. Right? We're much more than that. We're much more than simply a cultural hangover or ritual. But on the other hand, it cuts the other way. Which means to say, we could also have a Jewish name. And we could act Jewish. But if we don't have Torah and mitzvahs, then what's the flip side of what Rav Moshe is saying is, we're missing our identity too. Okay? So what Rav Moshe is saying on the one hand is something which gives a great sense of relief to us. But at the same time, it's also something which imposes a responsibility. And the question that we have to ask ourselves is, our Jewishness and our Jewish identity is dependent on that very factor. And that's the transition. So when we're trying to put these two things together, there were times in history where the poets came to deal with Jews who really were in crisis when it came to the identity of their names. There were times where there was crisis in terms of assimilation, and certain rabbonim were saying, this is the time where we need to actually draw a red line. Ultimately speaking, says Rav Moshe, it comes back to a question of identity. And we are thankfully at a time where we are able to practice our identity as being Jews through Torah Judaism. Metz Hashem, we should all be zoche to the geula because of that identity.
Joseph, Sarah,
Isaac. It's biblical. It's biblical.
But it's an English word.